Welcome back. Gavin Riley with you on the record until 1 o'clock. Donal Fallon has popped in for another edition of Hidden Histories. Good afternoon, Donal. How are you?
Good to be here. Good to be here.
It's a particularly topical one that you've chosen this week. A really, really topical one because we know all about the problems that Ireland and Dublin in particular is currently facing as regards accommodation and what sort of buildings there should be and whether there's enough space for performance art and the likes of whether it should all just be corporate offices and then luxury penthouses or whatever. So there's obviously serious questions about what way the city is heading. But you're reminding us that, of course, this is, of course, is not a new debate because it's 40 years ago this week when we had the big debate around Wood Quay, the construction of the civic offices, which are now the headquarters of Dublin City Council, on what many consider to be the birthplace of the city in the first place. Led to huge protests and occupations. And tomorrow, as we said, is the anniversary of one of those significant protest marches. So, I mean, archaeology in general, it's not generally the sort of thing that exercises people to get up and walk out in the street.
It's not, no. And I mean, this march, to the anniversary tomorrow of the Save Wood Quay march, I think is a really interesting moment in Irish social history. Because in general, what do people go and protest about? People go and protest about stuff that directly affects them, you know, especially when it affects them in the pocket. So if you look at the largest demonstrations in Irish history, you know, generally they've been around things like strikes, austerity measures, the PAYE strikes as well. But tomorrow is the 40th anniversary of this enormous march. Tens of thousands of people take to the streets in defence of heritage, something which was unprecedented and brought massive international attention to Ireland. And really what it was about at the time is this debate, which is not unlike the debate that's currently playing out in Dublin over the direction in which the city was heading.
Now, when you look back at it, and of course, hindsight is 2020, so you can look back and see what a lot of these people arose to. But the story of the Wood Quay March, and you look at all the people who were involved in agitating for that and who helped to organise the march, there's an awful lot of very famous names.
There are. And some of the most celebrated kind of figures of 20th century Irish political life are there. So you have the Labour senator, later president, Mary Robinson, very much at the centre of everything. Other names are more forgotten now. I mean, F.X. Martin, UCD historian at the time, constantly in the newspapers. And in his own words, he says, you know, we sent out word to the public and people came dressed appropriately to the march. Academics in their gowns and young people dressed as Vikings with horns on. You know, not unlike the Viking splash tour that you see making its way through the city.
Did academics routinely wear gowns every day and not just for conferrals?
Absolutely.
I love the idea of the professors just walking down the street in their big black robes.
And then in the other corner, I mean, you have Sam Stevenson. And I consider Sam Stevenson one of the great architects of 20th century Irish history. I just think many of his greatest buildings are in the wrong place. You know, and he's one of the foremost advocates of what was called the brutalist style of architecture. Yeah. So some of his buildings attract enormous controversy. The Central Bank, you know, the ESB headquarters at Fitzwilliam Street.
Very controversial.
Very, very controversial. I mean, they knocked down a row of Georgian houses to build this brutalist office block. They since have knocked down the brutalist office block and will replace it with fake Georgian houses. This thing has been a never-ending cycle. And then Wood Quay. And I think, as I say, these are fine buildings. They're great 20th century buildings, but they're sometimes just in the wrong location. And their settlement in very significant heritage sites, be it a Georgian terrace or a Viking settlement, made these buildings major bones of contention. And there's a real culture clash, as much as anything, in Dublin as a result of this style of architecture.
Yeah, I'm just struck that, by the way, when we talk about the luminaries that are involved in some of those demonstrations, of course, one of the people famously agitating for the retention of the old Georgian row at Fitzwilliam Street, which is what's going to be back for the ESB headquarters, is a certain Miss Finucane, who people might be hearing on other airwaves at certain times of the week, who we won't mention anymore at this juncture. Of course, the difficulty that we had in 1979, which is somewhat the same difficulties we have these days as well, is that everyone agreed that there did have to be civic offices.
Absolutely.
That the corporation needed a new home.
From right across the political divide, there was agreement that Dublin Corporation needed to build civic offices. I mean, the question was, where would they be? And from the 1950s onwards, it was obvious that the corporation felt they'd be in the Wood Quay area. I mean, they were buying land there en masse. And the area was pretty dishevelled. And streets like Wine Tavern Street, Fishamble Street, they were really in need of immediate attention. And you could say the same about an awful lot of the buildings that were facing down onto the River Liffey. But public curiosity in that site is increasing massively throughout the late 1960s. Because before you can build anything, what you have to do in Dublin, a city as historic as Dublin, is bring in the archaeologists. And the digs in that area in the late 1960s are absolutely incredible. And Thomas Heffernan, who's like maybe the leading authority on this dispute, he writes that, you know, the extent, variety and significance of the archaeological material on the site became clear. And when the amount of time needed for adequate excavation began to be calculated, the four office buildings began to seem ominous.
I actually find it really baffling in hindsight. Again, hindsight always being 2020, but the idea that the likes of Wine Tavern Street or Fishamble Street, which were basically like Dublin's first settlements, I mean, that was the headquarters, that was the O'Connell Street of Viking Dublin. And the idea idea that they'd fallen into such dereliction, I think, is baffling.
It's all in the name, like Fishamble Street, the oldest street in Dublin. Fishamble means Fish Market Street. So you're going right back into the very heart of the origins of the city in those streets. So
tell us then about a young man named Pat Wallace, who has a pretty big role to play about all of this.
If there's one person I wouldn't want to be in this, it was Pat Wallace, because it was a young archaeologist who just recently joined the National Museum of Ireland. And he went on to become the head of the National Museum. But in many ways, he's the man who's caught in the middle, because if you work for the National Museum, technically speaking, you know, you're an employee of a state institution. You're a civil servant, but you're also an archaeologist, and you're driven by your love of that industry. So his sympathies are very much with those who are seeking to preserve the site. And he talks about what they're finding there. I mean, when he writes about the Woodkey site, he says they find the remains of 140 houses in the Fishamble Street area. He says, "I discovered the best evidence in Europe for town layout at that time." And the more time people like Wallace spend on the site, the more they discover, the more the public interest beyond the site starts to grow, and tensions grow. And stuff that's being taken out by bulldozers by the corporation and dumped in landfill sites in Ballyfermot and other places, kids are digging through that. And they're finding stuff. So people are finding Viking and medieval material in dumps, not to mention what's been found at Wood Quay. Yeah. And the public are sitting up and saying, what's going on here?
Which is then why things begin to snowball pretty quickly, and that the public gets on board. And that's why you have then the tensions of the summer of 1979.
1979, this thing just accelerates, and in fact it erupts. And what you get is activists who are kind of afraid of the impact of the development on the site. They move in June and they occupy the building site. And I mean, the people that are involved are amazing. The Irish Times report's great. It says, poets and politicians, writers and artists, trade unionists, and people from the Liberties.
there's some sort of distinct other
in Dublin. But I mean, you have James Plunkett, the man who wrote Strumpet City, brilliant writer. Oisín Kelly, he's the man responsible for the Children of Lair up in the Garden of Remembrance. Michael O'Leary, TD.
Yes, the Labour Party leader of the time, not the airline magnate.
With an airline founder. Mary Lavin as well. I mean, these people raised the flag of the Black Raven over the site, which is this great symbol, kind of synonymous with Viking times, and they call it Operation Citric, in honour of Citric Silkenbeard, the one-time ruler of Dove Lynn, or Viking Dublin. And then you get people coming down to see what's happening. I mean, this kind of occupation is a new thing in Ireland. Peter O'Toole, the actor, arrives down, the Lord Mayor of Dublin, and there's a constant media circus, you know, around that occupation. But it would be wrong to say everyone in Dublin agreed with them. I mean, there were dissenting voices at the time.
Isn't it always the way?
In a city that was falling down around itself in various parts, some people argued that these people were standing, you know, in the way of progress. The city was in economic dire straits. People in the building industry and the construction industry were quite excited. And some politicians, I mean, Ben Briscoe from Fianna Fáil. Ben Briscoe, that's a family that are steeped in the history of Dublin. But Briscoe comes out and says that the media is basically giving the protesters, quote, a bandwagon to perform upon. And he says most archaeologists in Ireland support the corporation and what they want to do, which I don't think was true. But anyway, he's trying to sell the thing. But the editorials in the newspapers are scathing. I mean, the Irish Times says, now that we know more clearly the facts of our past, all the greater is the onus on us to respect that which has been left to us. Whether the remains are Viking or Celtic or Anglo-Irish, in bulldozing them as if they were Sunset Strip hamburger joints, we are leaving a miserable, craven, cheap inheritance to succeeding generations. That's the kind of language of the day. It's very, very loaded, and you really couldn't be neutral.
Reading that back, that's an Irish Times editorial. That's sort of up there with the November 2010, where it was it for this sort of stuff.
Absolutely.
Of evocative, you know, like, what are we leaving behind us? So then this all then culminates in the march, which was 40 years ago tomorrow, the 23rd of September 1979, the Wood Quay March.
And September 1979 is remembered for other things. You know, the papal visit was only days away. But this march is a really important kind of shared cultural memory in Dublin. And when you look at the footage which survives on YouTube, what gets me every time about it is the variety of the people on the march. I mean, they've come from all across the island of Ireland. And you look at the banners, Kilkenny, Waterford, Cork. The Liberties. These are all like great historic settlements in their own way. But it's the presence of so many buggies in the march that I think is amazing. Now, these aren't the weekly agitators who are out protesting every week about something different. These are, you know, concerned citizens from right across the political divide. And when you see all of those buggies and all those kids being carried on the shoulders of parents, people believed on that march. They're marching for the future as much as they were marching about the past. It's a very powerful thing.
So when we talk about hindsight being 2020, then the one thing where it's slightly difficult or maybe a little bit more arguable to determine with hindsight is who won here.
Yeah.
Like who wins from all of this? Because nonetheless, people wanted to retain Woodkey, and yet the city council offices are there today. So clearly that was a defeat of sorts.
Yeah. If you walk down the River Liffey, you'll see that the civic offices are there.
Yeah.
So initially you would say, well, clearly they won, the developers won. But I think what the groups like Friends of Medieval Dublin, Save Woodkey, what they did manage to do is the archaeologists were given a lot more time and space to work on that site because of public pressure. And if you go to the National Museum of Archaeology on Kildare Street, which amazingly is free, I mean, that is a world-class museum you can just walk into with no admission. Many of the artefacts that were discovered at Woodkey are there. So we have amazing insight now into the kind of Viking and medieval worlds of early Dublin because of those campaigners and the fact they demanded the space to work. But think about how archaeology has developed and come on in the 40 years since. Imagine what modern technology will be able to do and find at that site.
Yeah, it's a very fair point. So then bring us back to where we started then and the sort of contemporary thing that we can learn from what went on 40 years ago.
Look, the past always echoes in the present, and I think Woodkey isn't just about history. It was about people's opposition to very bad planning. It was totally just a disaster of regulation in Dublin at that time. And Frank MacDonald, his great book, The Destruction of Dublin, I think that remains essential reading. It's probably time to give it a reprint. A lot of what was built at that time is now either gone or condemned to go. You know, buildings that were not without enormous controversy in their day and didn't make it 40 or 50 years. So Woodkey can only be understood, I think, in this broader context of bad development and the debate on the way forward for the city then and now. And I mean, there are definite lessons to be learned. What do we build? Who do we build it for? Where do we put it?
Yeah, very salient questions, which are more topical today than ever. Donal, that's really fascinating. And as I said, really, really timely stuff. So thank you for bringing us in that one. Donal Fallon is a historian and author, and he is the creator of the Come Here To Me blog and books, volumes 1 and 2 of which are available in all good bookshops now.